Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. You sing the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm at AH Malcolm on X, Twitter, whatever. And of course, over at RedState.com, where he is doing some fantastic work. And it's been a while since we've had a chance to talk, Andrew. And I am pleased to tell you that the mainstream media is doing such a great job these days of covering the news. I mean, covering it with a blanket and smothering it until it dies. They're doing a great job with that, Andrew.
Yeah, it's like one of those fireproof blankets. It works like a bad charm.
You know, I got into this tussle with brief tussle, I should say, with a writer from Politico who I won't name. I named him on an earlier podcast. I won't name him here because Twitchy wrote a post about it. If you want to go over to Twitchy, you can find out all about it. I had written about how the mainstream media wasn't reporting on the violence in the streets, even though we're all watching it, right? I mean, these are clips that are available, and yet the media is going, well, no, the city's fine. It's just, it's peaceful protests, and it's nonsense. You've got people dropping rocks on cops from, I think it's over the 5 freeway, right? I mean, you and I both know this. It was a 405. Okay. As it's going through Los Angeles. And I think it had to be the 5 because it was right by the Union Center exit. Anyway, they're trying to kill cops, right? They're burning vehicles. There's smoke billowing everywhere. There's, you know, they were attacking ICE agents last week.
And the Mexican flag, because they like it so much, they don't want to go back.
I mean, they're waving the Mexican flag because basically they're saying this is Mexican territory and the gringos got to get out is really what that's all about. Anyway, so I write about this and I've got something, and this reporter quote tweets me on your platform, Andrew. You are the Prince of Twitter. I expect action. by saying, why do we have to play by these infantile rules of either the entire city is on fire or everything's totally fine? And who said I said that the entire city was on fire? I never said that. So I quote tweeted him back and said, I would just be happy if the media would report on the violence that's actually occurring. And by the way, I never said the entire city was on fire. Why don't you take that straw man and give it to the rioters as kindling?
Oh, that's a good one.
I didn't hear back from him after that.
No.
Which is fine by me. And I still don't need. You got Brian Stelter on CNN talking about how it's a violent riots is a right wing thing, and the Democrats saying, "Oh, the violent it wasn't violent until Trump sent in the National Guard," which was nonsense. I am surprised that even after the collapse of credibility on the left, that they're still trying to push these false narratives, and the media is still trying to rinse it.
It's all they got. And this Trump derangement syndrome is so blinding that, you know, they just can't move on. It's sad. I don't understand it. It's so in defiance of reality it hurts them more to stick with it rather than adjusting and saying, well, look, there are some fires, but the whole city isn't on fire. Okay, fine. But stop with this mostly peaceful. There's nothing peaceful about it.
Yeah, there's nothing peaceful about it.
And they're playing. And Newsom is too, and Bass, the mayor. They're playing right into Trump's hands. And I guess they think, well, then they can say he wants to be a dictator. I guess that's the plan. But these guys are paid by Soros or whomever to cause trouble, same as with the Israeli-Gaza stuff on the university campuses last year. They're not going to let it go.
But I mean, honestly, I mean, this is the thing about, normally I'm an incentives guy, right? I tend to think of, I tend to predict actions based on incentives, right? If you're not going to do anything about people getting violent in the street, for instance, riots will expand. That's what we found in Minneapolis in 2020. It's what Los Angeles learned in 1992, right? In the Rodney King riots, the police retreated and the violence just expanded, just exploded, really, once the police retreated from the streets. Using incentives, you would think that with the Democrat Party's approval ratings somewhere in the teens at the moment, not just in one poll, but in multiple polls, with voters who are asked about issues ending up in like, you know, 2-1 or 70-30 or 80-20 supporting Donald Trump's positions on things like immigration, right? This issue that's right here.
Right.
You would think that that would incentivize some, I don't know, soul searching at least, right? About maybe we're on the fringe of the American electorate and maybe we should be thinking about these things differently. And with the media's credibility, and this is really, I think, the big point, so low that you have MSNBC and CNN combined, not even coming to half of Fox News's audience, and Fox News outdoing some of the, you know, the big three broadcast news platforms. You think that those incentives would force some changes, and yet, yeah. I don't know, maybe it's early days. I don't know. Do you see any hint that they're actually looking at the incentives here? They're being incentivized by this rejection? No.
I think they're being incentivized by being paid to do this. And any reason not to, unless you pay them more, they're gonna. So, yeah, it's not reason anymore or an argument, reasoned argument. It's rote and it's finance. So they're getting paid to do this. So it's disturbing because what they're trying to do is to wreck society. And Trump isn't playing into their hands. But of course, Biden did. Biden was their hand. So he allowed this stuff to get going. Who was it? General McChrystal was writing last week or the week before about the loss of character in the country. And I think he's right. We're not thinking about good or bad or positive or negative. We're doing things by rote. In this case, I believe they're getting paid to do this. And then the media tries to treat it as a legitimate protest against this would-be dictator, Donald Trump. And this is why a credible media is important to a democracy. You need some sets of commonly accepted facts, and there are none. I don't know, California is the fertile ground for this. They've made hay off of it. And voters just keep sending them back with super majorities. Now, I don't know if this is going to change with the next person. I see on Twitter there are people talking about get James Woods in, and then there's Steve Hilton from Fox who says he's going to run on the Republican side. I don't know if California is smart enough. There's enough people who aren't supposed to be there who are getting all kinds of benefits, driver's licenses, health care, and benefits. So, you know, why should they go home where they don't have that? And why should they, the ones who are violent, which is a minority, but still a very noisy, violent minority, gives them a bad name, but good and bad doesn't matter anymore. It's what meme you're believing today.
Well, and I think that's what it is. There's no standard, right? I mean, it would be one thing that if your standard was always, it's not violent until everybody's violent. Okay, it's a stupid standard, right? But okay, I could go with that. So then explain how you covered January 6th, that that's your standard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
reason doesn't matter anymore, that which is unreasonable, and that's by definition, but it doesn't matter.
And I'm not even sure that it's being paid per se, right? I'm gonna be nicer. I'm gonna be nicer than Andrew. Andrew's not a nice guy.
You're too nice. That's because you went to mass last night, probably.
I really need to go to confession tomorrow, actually, after saying this right now. But yes. I'll just say that it's basically ideological capture of the entire industry. And these are people who marinated in revolutionary thought in the J schools. And I'm not talking about just the last 5 years. I'm talking about for the last 40 years. And the people who were marinating 40 years ago are now the people making these decisions, right? They're the people in these news organizations, at least at the news level, who are making these things and making these decisions. However, now they're running into the business people who write the checks for this, who are actually responding to incentives, right? And I mean, CBS News, right? Paramount owns CBS News. Paramount Plus owns CBS. And Paramount is apparently going to cut a deal with Donald Trump for the defamation suit. You know, you've already had ABC cut a deal to get out of a defamation suit. CBS is apparently going to do it over the editing, the hacktastic editing job that 60 Minutes did on the Kamala Harris interview and some other comments that were made about Donald Trump. And Leslie Stahl and Scott Pelley are off whining about, oh, this is terrible for independent journalism, as if that even exists. And in the meantime, the business people are going, look, we're simply not going to write checks because you guys want to be ideologues on the air. And if you don't like that, there's the door. And I think Scott Pelley's already out of it. And Leslie Stahl might be right behind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember Leslie Stahl did an interview with Ronald Reagan, and then she did a hit piece on elderly. And, but it had Ronald Reagan's words in it. And, I forgot his name, but who was the Michael, somebody who was the communications guru.
Devers, right? Michael Devers?
Yeah, yes, yes. And he thanked Leslie Stahl, and she couldn't understand why, because she wanted it to be a hit piece. And he was thanking her because it showed pictures of old people and Reagan. And they conflate that into positive for Reagan. And it was. These people, you know, I traced this in a piece a long time ago about Watergate, which was positive journalism. This was exposing the corruption of the Nixon administration and forcing the first president to resign. And then a generation or two of young people came along, and they wanted to do that. And they saw the movie, they read the book, and this was great stuff, Woodward and Bernstein. And somehow it morphed from good journalism into fixing society. And this is what these young people who were promoted ahead of their time, because DEI and other rules in journalism, they didn't go through. I had friends on my first major newspaper who were clerks working on their own time to do stories to show they could be a reporter for years, several years, 5-6 years before they got a chance to be reporters. These people back in the 80s and 90s, you know, 5 or 6 days was a long time. That guy, what was his name? Jason, somebody on the New York Times who made up stuff. He was supposed to be a big star. He interviewed, people and wrote some 600 stories that the Times later had to investigate all of them. And they found that a third of them were made up. He never left Brooklyn. And yet he was interviewing people in Virginia. That they didn't spend these long, and I went through it, impatient, frustrating years as apprentices, learning the culture values of the place. And now the New York Times and others have just given in to them. Remember when...
Because you reported news, they're fronting an ideology. There's a huge difference.
That's right, because they want to fix what they see as wrong with society. And then you get murky into free speech, and you know, you can complain or work against things you think are wrong in society. That's fine, but not as the common purveyor of, or the purveyor of common facts. And journalists, and they became, as you say, ideologues who wanted to fix society through journalism. So anything that didn't fit that narrative, they left out. And they distorted the things that the right was trying to do. And it was okay to collude with the Biden administration and censor social media over the Biden Jr.'s laptop and so many other things, because that didn't fit the narrative of fixing what was obviously wrong with society. And at that time, Donald Trump was what was wrong with society. But Donald Trump... You know, I don't know how he survived those years of lawfare and assaults, you know, financially, but just mentally. And now this country has come around to back his ideas that we need to fix this stuff and we need to fix it fast. And yes, he's using, he got off of the Elon Musk dispute narrative and got onto this, which is much better for him and for the right. To be fighting against immigrants who are fighting against the law.
I mean, a couple things about that. Both men really needed to take a deep breath the end of last week. I was guest hosting for Hugh Hewitt on Thursday when this thing just erupted like an hour prior to going on air. It's like, well, I guess our whole schedule is now changed. And honestly, I think the whole thing was silly. Yes, I'm not even absolutely. Sure how real it was, right? I think once Musk dropped the Epstein bomb on Trump, it was clear that it wasn't, you know, totally phony either. I mean, obviously there was a problem there, but you know, Musk has bigger problems. He's got bigger fish to fry. The Wall Street Journal reported today that apparently the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security was surveilling Musk and the contacts he was making. Sometime around the point in time when he bought Twitter and threatened to make it into a free speech platform. And I don't think that those two things were unrelated. I'm surprised it's not getting more traction than it is, because that's a huge thing. There was no reason for the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice to be surveilling a U.S. citizen. Musk is a U.S. citizen, has been for, I think, 20 years now.
Well, they did the same thing to Michael Flynn. That's why they're tearing apart and trying to rebuild the FBI.
So to get back to the media thing.
Yeah.
One thing that happened this week was that ABC News reporter, that's the title, I think senior news correspondent actually is the official title, Terry Moran, was suspended indefinitely by ABC News for tweeting out that Stephen Miller, the Trump advisor, not the guy on Twitter, who I think is one of our colleagues, if I'm not mistaken, at one of the platforms, is a world-class hater working for world-class haters, meaning Donald Trump. So ABC News suspended him. He actually deleted the tweet, but of course, everybody screenshot it, went all over the place. ABC News apparently suspended him without pay, or indefinitely. I don't know if it's without pay or not. And to at least this moment, I don't know if any resolutions come to that. And in my mind, I'm wondering, I don't understand what the issue is. ABC News has treated Donald Trump like that for 9 years. Why would they object if, they should. Reporters shouldn't be doing that. News reporters shouldn't be doing that. If he was an opinion guy, if he's a columnist at the New York Times, I mean, we can just simply address the issue of his opinion. But I mean, it does. It shows an inherent bias in whatever Terry Moran is going to report when it comes to, Stephen Miller and the administration. But honestly, I know people are saying, this is finally some accountability, but honestly, that's not accountability. That's ABC News covering its ass. It's exactly the way ABC News has been covering Trump and not just Terry Moran.
Well, and Moran has no business doing that. But in the media that we just discussed, where you want to fix society. He's virtue signaling the way they used to do about buying Teslas, and now it's selling Teslas or burning them or whatever. His virtue signaling to his colleagues and friends. You know, Chuck Todd, who made some egregious mistakes himself on NBC, was on a podcast and said when he was pressed, he said he thought that if the coverage of Trump was biased because he thought his colleagues didn't want to be labeled as helping Trump. See, this would be bad for society to pick Donald Trump. And so you must do everything, including distorting, ignoring what the news is, to fight against Trump getting reelected last fall. And it's just not the business of journalists. We had the party press. We had a whole long era of party press in which if you were a Republican, you bought this newspaper. If you were a Democrat, you bought that newspaper. And it died off because we moved into an era of fundamentally fair. Yeah, sure, there was bias. It was bias, not as openly as today by any means, but bias in terms of what you chose to cover.
You didn't lie about what you were covering. You might not cover some story, right? Yeah.
You didn't cover the things that were distasteful for your side or for what you wanted. And you could cover that and say, well, it wasn't really news, or boy, what a busy day that was. We couldn't cover everything. As my father used to say, isn't it amazing how every day just enough news happens to fill each newspaper?
I love that.
I have always loved that. And he said it to me, and I was naive at the time, and I thought, yeah, that's right. And that has shaped my thinking for a long time. I realized there's a lot of stuff that doesn't get in, and a lot of it doesn't need to get in because it's not really important or of value. But now they're blocking out stuff that is important and twisting stuff that is to fit their ideological narrative. It's sad for the country. I don't know. I don't think the existing media can ever recover. There will be a new media that people will come to be comfortable with. And it may be the old party press, you know, where you believe these guys if you're conservative, you believe these guys if you're liberal. It's not very healthy for a functioning democracy, but whatever. And Democrats are so desperate. They're in such a hole, and they keep digging at themselves after November. You know, the big lesson that they drew from November was we weren't leftists enough. Well, okay. U.S. parties eventually recover. I mean, the Republicans got shellacked in 64. Remember Barry Goldwater? That was the first time I voted. And I mean, it was the worst.
I read about it.
Yeah. Well, it's the first time I voted. And I remember crying at the time. It was so emotional to me to actually be voting. And that's before they lowered it to 18. But, and 2 years later, Republicans came right storming back and seized a lot of success in Congress and governor's offices. And then 2 years after that, in 68, they won the presidency for 5 of the next 6 presidential elections. So, you know, the Democrats are not dead. They'll come back. And I have to say, and that's what last week's column was about, was, boy, this is kind of fun watching them struggle. I have to admit it. It's not very nice to say that, but it is.
Oh, Schadenfreude just fine. I don't have a problem with Schadenfreude. Then again, I also have to go to confession this week. So maybe I'm indulging in that, and I got to go to confession.
All right. That's right.
I want to talk about your latest column, which was from the end of last week. Can Trump finally bring consequences down on that corrupt Biden crowd? And I think today's news from the Wall Street Journal regarding the surveillance on Musk after buying Twitter makes that question even more
important.
Makes that question even more acute, right? Because this is the weaponization of government against somebody who was seen not just as a political opponent, but also was about to dismantle part of the censorship regime that this administration created behind the scenes, and which got exposed
and maintained and fed and nourished with information that was positive for them. And this is before Musk was a Trump supporter.
Yeah, he was a free speech guy. So when they, buying Twitter while Twitter was in the middle of cooperating with all this stuff, the same as Facebook was, same as Google was, there was obviously a risk that Elon Musk was going to blow the lid off of it, which is, it turns out, exactly what happened. And only a couple of months after, really just a few weeks after the sale was finalized, he opened up the Twitter files, invited Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss and Michael Schellenberger in there to report on what was in the files. And it was explosive. I mean, I don't see how 2022 as the start of that process of the surveillance makes any sense other than in the sense of trying to keep a lid on the censorship regime. And because, Wall Street Journal, I don't know what the Wall Street Journal's deal is these days. I guess they're extra cautious. They said, well, it's because they were concerned that he was, had access to high ranking government officials. And so all these foreign people having an influence on him was a concern. That's nonsense. Musk has been doing business with the government for at least, prior to 2022, at least 10 years, right? He was launching rockets for NASA for at least 10 years prior to that. Yeah. He was the guy who built Tesla, which, progressives loved. And so he had access to all sorts of different people for years and years and years. Nothing changed in 2022, except he was buying Twitter. And this is part of that whole weaponization of government. So in your column, you're sort of aiming at whether or not Trump can deal with the corruption and weaponization, the absolute. There's all corruption on many different levels during the Biden years. Do you think he can do it?
No, but I hope.
But buy VIP membership anyway.
There is a legitimate question. Can he do it? I think he has the will to do it. He now has the power to do it.
I don't know if he's going to have the time.
One of the most disgusting examples of the Obama administration was Benghazi. 4 Americans were killed. The president disappeared for the entire episode. 16 hours, he was AWOL. They appointed one of their insiders, Mike Mullen, former admiral, to investigate an accountability review board. And he investigated the State Department and the whole incident. He read the documents that Hillary's chief of staff gave him. He never talked to Hillary. And he came out with recommendations about bureaucratic systems. No one paid a price. All right. That's the insiders in Washington taking care of each other. Then the Republican House Oversight Committee with Trey Gowdy had months of hearings on the Benghazi episode with disgusting revelations. Remember Hillary's great histrionics? Why does it matter now? And so on. And what came from that? Nothing. So there was 4 people were killed and nothing came of it. So there was rampant corruption, influence peddling, censorship, disgusting things. I mean, cocaine in the White House and all this. And the FBI just couldn't find anybody to prosecute. Going back at it, number one, it'll keep it in the news leading into the midterms, which is good for Trump. 2, I think they will find things. Now, I don't believe Biden or any of those people are going to go to jail, but I hope their reputations get completely ruined by revelations of the stuff they did, in effect, making Biden a figurehead president. They were doing the auto pen. They were doing all the decision making, who got pardons. I mean, seriously, do you think a president would pardon 36 of the murderers on federal death row?
Out of 39. Out of 39. It wasn't like he just decided that he was going to. Yeah.
You know, he left. He left the Boston bomber and somebody else.
Dylan Roof, yeah, the guy who shut up the black church in South Carolina. Yeah.
He left those two off and leave them for Trump to handle. But I just.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Trump will push the plunger on the syringe.
Yeah. Exactly. I just can't, I can't conceive of the stuff that went on, the bollocksing up of the Afghan exit by his indecisions and counter decisions to military advice. He wasn't in the military, and he's famous for not trusting the military. Robert Gates wrote about that. He's almost always wrong on foreign policy. Just remember, he was the guy that didn't want to send the SEALs after Osama bin Laden. So it's just such a fetid mess. I hope a lot of it gets exposed. I don't think anybody's really going to go to jail, but I hope reputations get completely nuked.
Yeah. Yep. Hopefully Congress will be part of this too, but you're right. The scope of the corruption is so large. I don't think a 4-year term is going to get to the bottom of all of it, but absolutely. No. But you know what you can do in 4 years? You can go over and read Andrew's column on this because it's really good. Right.
Yeah.
And then you can,
I'm trying to do stuff that's a little bit different off the news, relevant to the news, but not rehashing everything. It's just so boring.
I mean, my God,
I guess there was a lot of interest judging by the online traffic in the Trump Musk feud, but what does it matter? Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the reason why Trump let it go.
But it's easy to cover. Those guys in Washington don't have to do any work. They could sit there, rewrite yesterday's dispatch and put something on top. Today, Trump said this, and then 500 words of background. It's the easiest thing to do. It's conflict. It's hot, black and white, and they think it will get clicks, and I guess it does, but it's not real news, and it's something that I try to avoid. I don't want to
write about. And Andrew's got some great columns up there, by the way, and if you're a member, if you're a VIP member, obviously we keep this one in the clear. If you're a VIP member, you can you can leave a penny for your thoughts, comments on these, except on his thing about the pennies, because apparently it's going to have to be a nickel for your thoughts, because we're not making pennies anymore.
That's right. We're not going to make pennies anymore. And
does that make sense, though?
Well, what I turned it into was another one of my memories about what pennies were when I was a kid. And that was wealth. That was real. I mean, you could buy an entire bubble gum. Double bubble gum for a penny. 5 pennies got me a Hershey bar with almonds or a Clark bar, either one. 5 cents. And now people leave that stuff on the counter. I've talked to people at convenience stores and they go, and I said, oops, I'm short a nickel. And they go, no, I got it here. Somebody left it. You know, I mean, just because, well, I saved up. Took me 2 years to save $150 in the mid-50s to buy a shortwave radio that I desperately wanted and still have. Took me 2 years with an allowance and doing tons of chores. And that $150 is now worth, or not worth, $1,356. That's the difference. That's what a penny was worth. Whatever. I mean, I don't know. I had took algebra twice, so I don't know the math. But a penny was worth a lot more, and it cost them 3 cents to make. That was the audio commentary last week. I have another one this week.
So it doesn't make sense. Making sense doesn't make sense is the story here. All right. Well, we're just about done for today, but Andrew, you got a joke of the day for us? I got a couple for you.
Okay. I got one. Okay. And that is did some research. And did you know that there are no canaries on the Canary Islands?
No.
And the same thing is true in the Virgin Islands.
Okay. Wow, a little racy there from the Prince of Twitter. All right. I got a couple for you here. From jokesoftheday.net. I love jokesoftheday.net. Reaching the end of a job interview, the human resources officer asks a young engineer fresh out of MIT, what starting salary are you looking for? And the engineer replies, well, in the region of $125,000 a year, depending on the benefits package. And the interviewer says, well, what would you say to a package of 5 weeks vacation, 14 paid holidays, full medical and dental, company matching retirement fund to 50% of salary, and a company car leased every 2 years, say a red Corvette? And the engineer sits up and goes, are you kidding? And the interviewer says, yeah, but you started it. and having been a hiring manager for quite a few years in a previous career, yeah, I identify with that one. I wasn't hiring engineers, though. I was hiring more entry-level office people. All right. Last joke here. Two guys are sitting outside a medical clinic, and one of them is crying with tears pouring down his face. So the second guy says, why are you crying? The first one says, well, I came here for a blood test. And the second guy says, so why are you crying? Are you afraid? And the first guy says, no, not that. During the blood test, they cut my finger. And hearing this, the second man burst into tears. And the first one was astonished and said, why are you crying? The second guy says, I came here for a urine test.
Oh, all right. We need to move on from that.
Oh, yikes. All right. Well, Andrew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com. Another great week's podcast today. And we will be back next week. Good Lord willing, and Zoom don't rise. we'll be back next week for our next podcast interview. Andrew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter, at AH Malcolm on Twitter. And of course, RedState.com, the Regent of RedState.com. Andrew, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Thank you, Edward. After all these years, special thanks. And to everybody who tunes in, appreciate it. See you then.